We've got more material here than we know what to do with tonight, but I'll pray and we'll start plowing through it. We'll get to chapter 13 here in just a moment. Father, we come to you tonight in the name of Jesus. We thank you for the chance to be here. We ask that you would open our hearts. We ask that you'd give us peace in our souls through your word and by your spirit. Father, I ask that we may pursue the truth, live the truth, and be a light to the world. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, last week at the end of class, we just mentioned this, and this is an article that's in the Des Moines Register in 1995 by an individual. His name's typed here, we won't say it, but he lives in West Des Moines. He's an attorney here in West Des Moines, and you look him up on the internet and stuff. But he wrote this article in the editorial page in the Des Moines Register, and, you know, 10 years ago, I wasn't really into apologetics. I was a Bible student, you know, per se. I was pastoring a church. And growing up in, you know, some liberal churches, I read this and it just knocked the wind out of my sails, like I mentioned last week. But what I did here, this is beginning on page 71. I wrote a little booklet, just went through a bunch of apologetics, just started pouring through stuff. And I don't want to say I wrote a book, I just collected information out of, you know, several books for myself, and I presented it to the congregation. But I copied out here, at the very last thing I did then, I took his article and dismantled it, you know, the best I could. At least justified it in my own heart that he was wrong and I was right. So if you turn to page 72.
So this right here is your writing?
Right. Yeah, okay. the bold print is my writing.
This is what you wrote.
And page 72 is where you see paragraph 4, 5, and 6 of his article. I skipped the first three because they were just like introductory. And this is where the attack actually began. I'll just read a few things here. We won't spend very much time on this. The initial problem of fundamentalism, he says, is a predicate for law and social action. As a predicate for social law and action, is that the ideal of an inerrant Bible, which can be literally interpreted, is a rootless concept that does not make any sense. So what his attack is that fundamental Christianity belongs in a church somewhere in the backwoods and don't come out with your faith. Because what's happening way back in the 90s and is happening yet today is evangelical Christianity, fundamentalism, is taking itself into the streets. It's becoming part of our life. We make decisions based on our faith. They want your faith to be in a building somewhere and then come out and live like the rest of us so we can all cooperate. Very important that we all cooperate. And that's going to come out in our story tonight also in Revelation, is there's a time that they're going to try to make religions cooperate. But you see, it cannot be done. You cannot put religions and put everybody in the same pot. It will not work because they contradict each other. And you say, well, then let's just forget about religion. Well, we did that in the 1900s. Cultures tried to put religion away in the 1900s, and you can't do it. You cannot separate man and religion. Man will always drift to religion. Man will always have convictions. Man will always have something he believes in, if it's morals, if it's faith, if it's the afterlife, if it's what's just, he's going to have convictions and it's going to be reflected in some kind of religious system. And in the 1900s, they tried to do away with that, but things like atheism, communism are falling. They cannot stand because man is a religious being. It goes back to Daniel's statue when it talked about the head of gold, the chest of bronze or silver, then the waist of bronze, the legs of iron, and then you get to the feet of iron and clay. It says, in the book of Daniel, it says, As iron and clay cannot mix together, neither can all of these nations and cultures mix together. And the first 3.5 years of the tribulation that we've read through so far is going to be where the Antichrist, the world leader, accepts all religions and everybody just comes together. They got all this turmoil on the earth, all the disasters, and everybody's pulling together. Everybody's holding hands and uniting in their fundraising efforts to rebuild the earth. But everybody's faith is coming into the picture. And at the halfway point, it's chaos, not just in the world, but it's falling apart. People cannot unite. And that's when the Antichrist turns and does away with all religions except the worship of the beast. Well, anyway, he's upset right here as he begins this by saying the fundamentalism is based on the fact that the Bible is errorless or flawless and can be literally interpreted. It says the fundamentalist paradigm of an inerrant and literally true Bible is an American phenomenon developed over the last 2 centuries. The concept is out of step with the intellectual and spiritual growth of Western religion. And so then, where it says number 1, and I've got it underlined, that's where I then attack that point down here, where it says one. A single quotation from a liberal New Testament scholar can do an adequate job of refuting Weber here. Oops, I said his name. Christoph Lake, a professor of the University of Chicago. So you don't want to be saying attorneys' names on tapes, you know. Yeah. And an author who wrote at the height of the Liberal Fundamentals Conference, 1926. It says, I've got some quotes in by him there. And again, I'm not going to teach this to you tonight. I just wanted you to kind of see this. And the first part there is the fact he attacks it as being a modern concept that the Bible is without error. I can get into teaching this real quickly, but I just thought I'd give that to you.
Did this ever get printed in the paper?
No.
No,
in fact, I sent some stuff in, but the next Sunday, he got hammered. I mean, there's just people just drilled him with similar things like this. But anyway, some of the stuff I write, I wrote this 10 years ago, and some of it's good and some of it's bad, but it goes all the way through. Like I said, I'd like to teach. In fact, I've got this on tape. When I taught this, I do have this on tape upstairs. But anyway, that is a little collection there of that right there. Okay, so you've got that if you want to read through that. And, you know, it did. It upset me at first when I first read it. I mean, it not upset me, made me mad. It scared me because it's like I didn't have an answer for many of those responses. And I started doing some research. The next page I do want to read to you a little bit more. It's the smaller one here. And I got this in the email last night. Generation Word webpage, boom, here it comes. And someone's looking at my website. You know, I get stuff, people email me and stuff and make orders and get junk, you know. So you're deleting, and you think, is this something, you know, and then you open it up and it's something that you're glad you kept. And this one looked personal enough, so I thought, well, now, do you remember we talked about in the Church of Philadelphia, the keys of David? You remember that? In the Church of Philadelphia, early in Revelation chapter 3, he'll give you the keys of David. And we went back in the Bible and found out the keys of David were the keys to the royal treasures that someone wore on their shoulders. And it was like David's cupbearer. But anyway, this guy was on my website, apparently, and saw that I'd been teaching on the keys of David, how he found that on there. I don't know how he found my webpage. I don't know. But anyway, he begins. Greetings, my fellow believer in the Creator. There's my first red flag. Okay. I would like to say that I like your website. Wow. Cool. But I would like to share with you. See, right there, I like your website.
But.
All right, come on. To share with you the real meaning of the keys of David. Oh, well, I'm always open to learn. I figure, you know, I've pretty much exhausted a lot of commentaries, and there's not probably too much he's going to say there, but go ahead. Not implying that you're wrong. Now, that makes no sense at all, but I want to share with you the true meaning. I'm not saying you're wrong. Well, if you've got the true meaning, you're going to correct me. That only leaves me one option. I'm wrong. But he's not saying I'm wrong. But you notice that right there? It's like, you know, anyway.
He's trying to be nice to you.
Maybe. He's at a ball game. But you can shoot or something if you want to. Help yourself. But just adding understanding for the true keys of David. So now I know he's talking about the keys of David. The true keys of David and the keys of Enoch. What? Okay. Oh, I thought, well, this is interesting. And once you mention it, there's only so many verses about Enoch in the Bible. And so it's like you're going somewhere else now for your information. Are much more than you have explained to your readers. He's assuming I've got readers. The true keys lead the searcher into all truth. It's hard to accept, and most won't try to seek them. Over the last 22 years, I have found 256 of the keys of David. And believe me, you can't write them down in one web page. But I've also become known somehow worldwide as have the keys. Wow. This guy's huge. He's worldwide. For instance, I didn't get anything on the search. I looked up his name and none came up. So he's not that worldwide. For instance, I'll share a recent letter that I sent to a missionary in Africa after he'd been asked about for the keys and couldn't explain them. This is just one of hundreds of requests I've received from all over the world. Your brother in the Living Judgment. That's another, I mean, that's got a whole definition to it. And then the Church of Philadelphia. That's supposed to be where he calls his church. Then he writes in the letter, I'll only send you a couple of the keys at a time. And as you learn and apply them to your life, I'll give all that the spirit of man can hold in at one time. I'll just read the underlying parts. First of all, don't think I'm claiming to be a prophet. Because I'm not. I'm only one of God's lowest servants. I have been told by God, that I'm only one of whom he chose from before I was in the womb to understand the scriptures. He also told me many others and he has also told many others about me, and somehow they have found me as you have. I know this sounds strange. Drop down. God revealed to me that he was alive and living in my heart. He told me that all people born since Christ ascended were born with the Holy Ghost in them. Ooh. He's read the Bible several times, but that doesn't mean anything. As a guide to help us find truth, he also told me that he was a judge because we were living in a living judgment. To the next page. He told me that it was time to remove the stumbling block from the minds of the chosen. I didn't understand, so he explained to me that since I asked for truth, that he was the truth. He explained that I had heard him teach. Are you ready for this one? Now, if you drifted off, refocus. He explained that I had heard him teach when he was on the earth in the flesh, and that he had given me this last chance to prepare for the life which he had planned for me when I returned home. Then he told me that man had changed the Bible so much that God had allowed it to become a stumbling block to most unless they receive the keys of David. He told me he had prepared for all that goes on, and then he begins talking about the keys right there. Let's read where that first star, that's kind of like the first. I'm trying to find the keys here, you see. I wish you'd say key one, key two, key three, but I'm reading this over and over and trying to find the keys.
It's funny how he says a rare number like 256 keys only a man can handle.
Right, yeah, but, and they're still growing. You're going to find out there's keys behind each door also. He asked me who wrote these first three verses in Revelation. I replied, John. He said that man wrote the first three verses because John started on the fourth verse. I read them, and the first verse said that the Spirit gave John things which would shortly come to pass. But the Word said that man put those verses there as a post-hypnotic suggestion so that most people would stumble over Revelations. He told me that he'd actually said was down in verse 19 of that same chapter. And then that leads on to who started, the false apostles are the church, and he goes on and on and on. And I mean, we could read more of this right here. But I do want you to notice that the very last paragraph he writes, you watch this last paragraph. This is going to come into our story tonight on that last, on page 3. Let me say to any refugee who hears this, forgive them who oppress you. Love your enemies and forgive them the things they do to you, and your burden will be greatly lessened. It's easy to love your friends and family, but the love God has shown me, that the more he loves you, the more trials he puts you through. Now, I want you to notice how you hear the voice of the loving shepherd there at the end. Okay, you see? Okay, now you turn the page. I respond, of course. Congratulations on being known worldwide. I am honored that you've taken time to read my website. I have a hard time believing that you say, quote, I like your website, quote, since there is little, if anything, presented on it that you could accept as truth. The basic challenge you face is the same as Joseph Smith when he assumed the world had been without the truth from the days of the apostles until his time in the 1800s. The same appears to be true with you. To accept what you present, we first have to accept that the truth had been hidden from the world for hundreds of years until you came. Although you say, don't think that I'm claiming to be a prophet. Do you mean prophet or did you mean prophet? Second, based on your presentation, the reason the truth remained hidden for all those years was because no one sought the truth. It is hard to believe no one sought the truth for 1,800 years. It is amazing you would need so many keys. I need one key for my car, one key for my house, and one for my office. 256 keys means there must be a lot of locked doors. Are there really more keys behind the locked doors? I forgot the question mark. I mean, he writes in there that there, once you unlock a verse, boom, there's more after that. This begins to multiply beyond the realm of understanding. Good luck. This will no doubt continue to be confusing. Sincerely, though, I do appreciate you visiting the website. We both agree that truth will prevail. Art's reply. Thanks for your input. I can see that you didn't even check out what I wrote. You only took what your pride read into it. Is that the way you read the Bible also? God still loves you, even though you're full of hate. So, there you have it. Now,
where is he writing from?
He writes here about being like being on the road, being a rock star or something like that.
Well, that was in the past.
In the past, and then he got saved. But he almost sounds like he's foreign. Yeah, I think it sounds like something from Nigeria or something. But anyway, the point right there as we begin this tonight, and we go to our real notes now. And I don't understand that statement either. He says 60 years later, which I don't even know what apostle came 60 years later. That would be, you know, unless you're talking about John or something. I have no idea. But anyway, the point right there is we've got two examples here. One in the secular world of attacking the Word of God, trying to reduce, taking religion away from man, which can't be done because man is going to be religious. You've got this is just one of many, many just, you know, and he might even be faking. I don't know what he's doing. But in Revelation 13, we do come to a time, this is kind of why we started on this last week, as we mentioned this, Revelation 13. Right now, in our world, I gave you two examples here, and if you agree with them or if you don't agree with them, this first guy that criticized fundamental Christianity, there were answers to it. I mean, it's like, no, you're wrong, and here's the evidence. You may not accept it, but my heart rests assured that I've got the truth and that this individual is wrong. Now, he may not agree with it, but I'm not threatened. I'm not challenged. I was until I got the truth and investigated it. This right here, the second one, this email, you know, if you were completely in the dark and you didn't understand some things, you may think this guy's maybe finally got, you're looking for the truth, he's finally got the key. But when you get a little bit of information, it's kind of like, you know, he is doing to the Bible what higher criticism does. Now, higher criticism will take the Bible and it will begin to pull out the stuff that's been added to it by men through time. Now, I accept lower criticism. Lower criticism where you line up all the manuscripts and you realize that there are errors within the manuscripts that have been handed down. And you've got to go back like when you do any kind of linguistic work and decide which one of these looks like the original, which one got changed. You have to face it. That's the way it is. Unless you're going to side up with some Joseph Smith or somebody who's going to come along and purify it for you in your generation. You've got to go back and do the research. That's lower criticism. Higher criticism does not believe in the supernatural. It does not believe in the inspiration of Scripture. It does not believe the apostles were inspired. It believes it was all works of men. And it begins to pick it apart. In higher criticism, at least they've got a system. At least they've got some rules and regulations that they follow, and it's a huge group or it's a group of people working together as they tear the Scriptures apart. You can follow their thinking. This individual is doing his own higher criticism. He's picking and choosing as the Spirit shows him which words need to be pulled out, which words are correct. And it's like, it's no spirit, it's a demon. If it's a real spiritual experience, it's a demon that's leading this guy. But many people would not pick up. They just say, wow, he's actually got the truth. But if you've got any kind of spiritual fortitude, any kind of Bible knowledge, realize this is a joke, and it's we laugh at it. But imagine a day coming, as we're going to have here in Revelation 13, we're going to read it, where that's all gone. Where you cannot sit down with a set of books, encyclopedias, and pick apart a guy's article in the newspaper and say, no, that's wrong, that's a bad statement, you overstated this point. Or look at this guy right here who's saying things about the Spirit that he's just making up. And if he's not making up out of his own soul, his own emotions, then a demon indeed is talking to him. And it's easy to see that. The day is coming where it will no longer be easy. In the tribulation, we've got a 7-year period. The first 3.5 years, if we can say this, are the 3.5 years of grace, where a third of the people die, but 2/3 do not die. God sends disasters on the earth through a variety of ways, sometimes through man, sometimes through catastrophic events, causing men to realize we're in trouble. We cannot handle this by ourselves. There are many people, large numbers of people, that are saved during this time. 144,000 right away go out and begin to evangelize the world. So we do have results of people being saved. But those who continue to choose to follow or go away from God, continue in darkness, it appears the cutoff time is actually the 3.5-year mark. In a sense, God switches directions and he begins the judgment. And this judgment, this 3.5 years here, the last 3.5 years known as the time of Jacob's trouble, is both a judgment on the world and a judgment on Israel. Israel has sided with the Antichrist during the first 3.5 years and accepted him as their Messiah. During this last 3.5 years, he's going to be exposed. The false Messiah, Israel, is going to realize he's not the Messiah because he turns on all religions and says he is the only religion. During this first 3.5 years, all religions are going to be tolerated. Similar to what we hear today. We need to tolerate all religions. I believe we should tolerate all religions. God gave men free choice. He gave them a free will. You choose who you want to worship. Church history proves you cannot spread Christianity successfully by force. It's got to be done by the heart. You've got to convince, you've got to share, you've got to exhort someone with the faith. And the Spirit of God will be working. So yes, I accept all religions if you want. They're not all true. In fact, Christianity is true. Other religions are not true. But that don't mean I'm going to stomp them out. In this condition right here, this all-encompassing world of religions is not going to work for the Antichrist. By the midway point, there's so much chaos in the world, things are not working out, that he has to make a power play. And he's going to say, I am God. All these other religions are going to be persecuted. And at that point, when he turns on all the religions of the world, including Israel or the Jewish religion, that is when I believe they begin to look over their shoulder and say, do you think we've made a mistake? And they have to flee for their life. And during this last 3.5 years, there's going to be one world religion. It is going to be the worship of the beast or beast worship. Israel is going to be reevaluating themselves, reevaluating their false Messiah. And by the end, Israel, as Paul writes in Romans, all Israel, and you can define all Israel at a later time, but he says all Israel will be saved. They will come to a saving faith in Jesus Christ by the end of the tribulation. But the world is, many of course will be saved, but the world is going to buy into the great deception. The weapons that they're going to have to resist this are going to be very limited. One of the key weapons is going to be your faith or your previous knowledge. In other words, Jesus says himself, see, I have told you ahead of time. He says, these days are coming. And then he tells the disciples, see, I've told you ahead of time. So when this begins to happen, at least you're ready. Let's read chapter 13, beginning in verse 11. We'll read to the end of the chapter. Then I saw another beast coming out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. He exercised all the authority of the first beast on his behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed. And he performed great and miraculous signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to earth in full view of men. Because of the signs he was given power to do on behalf of the first beast, he deceived the inhabitants of the earth. He ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and had yet lived. He was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that it could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. He also forced everyone, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on his right hand or on his forehead so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of his name. This calls for wisdom. If anyone has insight, let him calculate the number of the beast, for it is man's number, his number is 666. I want you to go, please, to some verses now in the Old Testament. Go to Deuteronomy. Oh, I just saw, here's notes from yesterday's church service right here. If you want yesterday's message, it's down there. And I've also got the notes laying there. It's on faith, third one on faith. And it's interesting. Deuteronomy chapter 13. And this is God, of course, speaking through Moses to the people, and in chapter 13 of Deuteronomy, verse 1. Just look at what is contained here. If a prophet or one who foretells by dreams appears among you and announces to you a miraculous sign or wonder, and if the sign or wonder of which he has spoken takes place, and he says, let us follow other gods, gods you have not known, and let us worship them, you must not listen to the words of that prophet or dreamer. This reference here in Deuteronomy is talking about a prophet that was going to come, or prophets that could come in Israel's history, and perform signs and wonders, perform miracles. Now, do you remember Elijah on Mount Carmel? gave the false prophets of Baal every opportunity to call fire out of heaven. He waited. He mocked them. He said, they spent there dancing and shouting. They began to cut themselves and show Baal, look, we're bleeding for you. Look at this. So he began to mock him. He said to him, he says, well, maybe your God's away on vacation. Maybe you need to holler louder. Maybe he can't hear you. And then he finally says, well, maybe he's in the bathroom. That's what it says in the Hebrew. He's probably in the bathroom. You can't bother him while he's in the bathroom. And so Elijah is mocking them. And they go on, and it says they danced around their altar until they were exhausted. I mean, they're in this frantic exercise of worship, and they just fall down. They're just exhausted. And nothing happened. Elijah then sets up 12 simple stones, dumps water on the altar, as you know, steps back, says one simple prayer. Boom, fire from God consumes the altar, the water, and leaves a hole. And it's like, well, any questions? But here in Deuteronomy 13, Moses is talking about a prophet who will come to the people and he will do a sign and a wonder. He will predict something. It will be a magnificent. He maybe will call fire out of heaven. Now, in Israel's history, there were false prophets. We can see them. Isaiah countered them. Jeremiah endured them. All the way through the Old Testament. But there is no listing that I think of where a false prophet actually did a miracle. The closest you can come is Jannes and Jambres. In Moses' day, referred to in 2 Timothy, where they opposed Moses and they threw down their staff. Now, that was true magic, true witchcraft, true signs. Could have just been, you know, people to go back and forth. Even here, in our context tonight, some people think that they're performing signs and wonders, but they're imitation signs and wonders, in the sense that they're really not spiritual, they're just trickery. That could be a fair interpretation. I tend to believe that they are supernatural, because you can see that it's saying they were given power, meaning God is unleashing them. In Elijah's day, they were not given power. You understand, Israel was still under an umbrella of protection. God was not going to allow them to be deceived, to have the prophets of Baal call fire out of heaven, and then Elijah call fire out of heaven, and now you decide. Don't you believe that, or you should believe, that the demon Baal would have liked to have sent fire that day. But he looked at God and God says, don't even think about it. It's not going to happen today. But it will happen. It's going to happen in the tribulation where they'll be, okay, you call fire out of heaven. Whoa, how did you do that? We're God. And it's mentioned here in Deuteronomy, if a prophet appears and if the sign or wonder of which he has spoken takes place, meaning you're going to face a prophet who's going to be miraculously empowered. And the very thing that was the validated word from God was a sign. He's going to have a sign. But watch what your test is. The test is not the sign. Look, he's miraculous. Of course he's miraculous. Of course he's got supernatural power. He's a demon. If you're looking for miraculous power, a person will end up in this part right here, because it's, look, they're void of truth, and so they can only follow the sign. Moses warns them, this day is coming where they will have the power. They will have the sign. If you've avoided the truth for all these years, you're going to have to follow the sign into deception. And here's the test right here. And they say, let us worship them or other gods. You must not listen to the words of that prophet or dreamer. Why? The Lord your God is testing you to find out whether you love him with all your heart and with all your soul. Now, that day is going to be fulfilled right here for Israel during the last 3.5 years. And it happens, of course, at different times in history in different ways. But he's talking about a day where the Lord is going to allow a false prophet to have the power to deceive, and he's testing. Now, what do you know about the truth? Well, what's he saying? Well, he's saying we should turn away from what we believe to be the truth. Well, what do you think? Well, I guess so. Okay, go ahead. B to C. Go to Jeremiah 23, please. Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23. Just another example right here of Jeremiah dealing with the false prophets. Jeremiah 23, beginning in verse 16. It says here, this is what the Lord Almighty says. Do not listen to what the prophets are prophesying to you. They fill you with false hopes. They speak visions from their own minds, not from the mouth of the Lord. They keep saying to those who despise me, the Lord says, you will have peace. And to all who follow the stubbornness of their hearts, they say, no harm will come to you. And he goes on, he continues talking there. You go to same chapter, verse 21. God says, I did not send these prophets, yet they have run with their message. I did not speak to them, yet they have prophesied. But if they had stood in my counsel, they would have proclaimed my words to my people and would have turned them from their evil ways and from their evil deeds. It's interesting right there that the result of the truth is going to turn people into righteousness. But that's just a couple more examples, and you've got several things written down. You go to Jeremiah 27, Jeremiah 29. But one of the things that happens there, it mentions, is their imaginations or their own minds, is they think they're seeing things from God. They really think they're seeing things from God. Maybe like this individual we read about earlier here, maybe he really thinks the Spirit of God is talking to him, but it could just be his own imagination. I'm not sure if any of you have got an imagination, but if you start in that game of like every time something happens, every time, you know, a bird flies by or every time a car drives by or every time a light flickers, it's like, well, God's trying to tell me something. Then you think, well, what is he trying to tell me? Well, then just fill in the blank. And there you've got your answer. And you go out and preach that. And your imagination, once you develop that creative side of your imagination, then you can prophesy all day long and say absolutely nothing. So God can speak to your spirit. God does bring messages to people, but the imagination can do something or a demon can do things. Let's go on to back to the notes, please. And I got some things I typed out here. Matthew 7:15. Jesus says, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. That is what he's speaking to Israel. 2 Peter 2:1. False prophets arose among the people, just as there will also be false teachers among you who will secretly introduce destructive heresies, even denying the master who bought them. Once again, Peter's talking to the church age. I do want to point this out as we go by this. In the Old Testament, there were false prophets. Now, there can be false prophets in the church age, and then you get the whole debate, are there prophets, you know, or real prophets, however you want to debate that. But what Peter warns about, he does not warn the church about false prophets. He warns the church about false teachers. Because the church age is a period of where we are evangelizing the world. We're holding to the truth of God. And what is going to distract us is if we get bad teaching. We don't need a prophet. We've got the revelation of the apostles. We know what we're to believe. We know what we're to be teaching. We know what's happening next. Jesus left us in with a mission. We're to carry out that mission, and we know he's coming back. What's going to distract us is going to be the false teachers. Israel had the false prophets. Our problem is going to be false teachers, although false prophets can also arise, depending on your definition of prophets. Mark 13:22 says, for false Christ, this is Jesus talking about this time period we're talking about right here tonight, for false Christ and false prophets will appear and perform signs and miracles to deceive the elect, if that were possible. So be on your guard. I have told you everything ahead of time. From Moses writing in Deuteronomy about the false prophets having signs, to Jesus saying there will be false prophets, warning about how deceptive this time will be, the people who have been in the truth, have been paying attention, you know it's coming. And Israel should be alert to that. I'm going to read some notes here on this page as we just breeze through this quickly. The false prophet of Revelation 13 will be the leader of the Antichrist religion. The Antichrist will be the political and military leader who calls himself God. The false prophet will be the high priest who confirms the Antichrist's claim to deity. So you've got the Antichrist who's going to be in politics and in military. Remember, who can make war? Military. Who can make war against the beast? That's what it says. Who can make war against? No one can stop him. Then you've got the false prophet. And the false prophet is going to basically be the high priest, the religious leader, who is going to head everybody over in this direction and say we need to worship him because this beast is God. So the high priest or the false prophet, that is their mission. I wrote some things down here. I kind of referred to them before. About 1900s brought us a time of universal downplaying of the importance of religion. That age is over, friends. I believe that age is over. We are on a pendulum swing back towards religion. You've got Islam. You've got the fundamentalists, you know, you got George Bush in office because the church stormed the White House and the ballot or the polls, you know, whatever, however you want to break down. Everybody, you've got people that are extremely left-wing liberals running to the right in politics, making all kinds of statements. It's like, good night. But meaning, This pendulum has swung. In the 1900s, it was always like, well, it's not important. Everybody's got their own thing. Right now, everybody's wanting to talk about it. Everybody's trying to get out there and get their little corner of the market on religion. It may be that those days are over for good. Because if we are going into the tribulation, they said that's one of the next things to happen. The tribulation is a very religious time. The pendulum will always continue to swing back and forth. But nonetheless, the 1900s are over, and we are in an age, and I don't think it's just this year. I think we're on the pendulum swing. It's going to continue to grow. And as money gets put into religion, it's going to become more important, like in the days of Constantine. Once the emperor Constantine became a Christian, all the power was there, all the money was there, there was all the people. And the same thing, once people start running over into religion and starting getting enthusiastic, Hollywood's going to follow. You know, like the new TV show, I haven't even seen it yet. You know, we mentioned last week, we called it, Revelation or something like that. It's like, oh, they want spiritual Christian stuff. What's one of the books of the Bible? Revelation is the coolest one. So we'll use that title, and then they'll make up a story that's not even close to it, but it'll get people. There's a market for it. But you cannot take mankind, I mentioned here, you can't take man and put him in a vacuum without having religion follow. You put man in a vacuum, he's going to create religion. And if you can keep religion out of that vacuum of man, it's going to collapse. Like atheism, communism, it's going to collapse. At the beginning of the second half of the Antichrist will destroy all other forms of religion. Turn the page 2, please. We're about into our text. At the top of page 2, it says the majority of men will exchange their religion and accept beast worship because. At that halfway point, here again is our timeline. At this halfway point right here, men are going to have to make a choice. Over here, there are many religions. All the religions are intact on this side of the tribulation.
You think even Christianity?
Definitely. Definitely. Christianity will be, because you got the 144,000.
Well, I knew Judaism.
Judaism, it's going to be, it's the persecution, the killing isn't, I mean, there's going to be persecution, obviously, at all times. But the big persecution is going to come right over here. There's going to be Christian. The 144,000 evangelists around the world, they're not running, they're preaching. They have to go in hiding during this time. This is when they come out. This is when the mark of the beast comes out to kill them. Because they let them go, it didn't work. You see, they've got the truth, and they've let the truth go, and it's begin evangelizing the world, and so they've got to stop it at this point. So yeah, there's martyrdom on both sides of that, but the great persecution is going to be over here, where you can't come out. You can't come out in public and do anything. But at this point right here, and I'll say this too. Another sign of that is that the false prophet who's coming tonight is going to be a look like a lamb. The Antichrist looks like a bear. He looks like a leopard. That's a lot of letters. It looks like a lion. Those are the characters. Here's ferocious. That's Babylon, Persia, Greece. The false prophet, what's his animal characteristics like? A lamb. In other words, who is the true imitation of Christ? We call him the Antichrist, but the false prophet has to get into the game down here to deceive and draw away from people that are going Christward. Because he's going to come in, it's going to say he comes in like a lamb, but he's got the voice of a dragon. That's why I pointed this out in this letter right here, this one I got last night. Appears to be the lamb. This is just a sample. This is not like the epitome of hell. This is just a sample that came across last night. It says, forgive them who oppress you. Love your enemies and forgive them the things they do to you. Oh, that's so nice. But it's got the voice of the dragon. It's false doctrine from the beginning. But we're talking about love and forgiveness and the gentleness, the love of Christ. You see? I agree with the love of Christ. I agree with forgiveness. But what are you saying? You see? He appears as the lamb, but he's got the voice of the dragon. He's got the appearance of Christ, but he's got the doctrine of Satan. His motives. Satan appears as an angel of light. Jesus says, they'll appear, ferocious wolves will come in sheep's clothing. They'll come, and just because you drape it in love, peace, cooperation, forgiveness, doesn't it just make your heart hurt? It's like, well, you can be that way and have truth, but you can be that way and be full of the devil too. So anyway, these people, right, the false Christ prophet is going to come here at this midway point right here. And it's part of that effort is going to be to draw these people that are Christians or are thinking Christward, draw them into beast worship.
Are these two physically different people?
Yes. again, now your interpretations is going to be wide open. Some people want to make it a system. Some people think the Antichrist who receives a fatal wound, then the false prophet replaces him. The problem is, in this chapter, it says the false prophet will perform signs and wonders in the presence of the Antichrist. So he's standing there as the false prophet's demonstrating. And then in chapter 19, or at the end, they're both thrown into the lake of fire at the same time. They're both captured and thrown into the lake of fire. So, again, depending on the way you've interpreted the Bible or interpret the book of Revelation or hermeneutics, you can go several directions with what these are. But the way I see it, the way my hermeneutics is going here, my interpretation, is these are two men. This is a man, Antichrist is a man, who last week we talked about being possessed by a beast or a demon from the abyss. So they may be a man with a demonic power working in him. This right here, we're going to see this man is going to be a beast coming out of the earth. This beast, the Antichrist beast, was coming out of the abyss or out of the sea. This is going to come out of the earth. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But I see these as being two individual people. It says, the majority of men will exchange their religion and accept beast worship at the halfway point because, one, they are willing to accept a variety of truth since they have no absolutes. Over here, they're accepting all over here. How about if we just forget everything you all believe and we just make one big pot over here? Oh, that's good for me too. If you have no absolutes, what's the deal? We'll just switch over here. Another one, they will see the signs and wonders done by the false prophets. When they see what the false prophet does right here, it's like, oh my gosh, our old religion never did that. And so because they have no absolutes, they're willing to come. Because they do not know the truth and they see the signs, they're willing to come. Believers, though, and there will be believers. Many will have died, persecuted, the disasters. But there will be believers that are going to now begin facing martyrdom, but then also will hide and survive. They will refuse to exchange the truth for a lie because, one, they know the absolute truth and cannot deviate from it for everything else because everything else is a lie. There are some over here that have received the truth. They know the truth. And when they see this, they know it's a lie. They know it's a lie, not because, well, look, that's not a very good sign and wonder. They know it's a lie, not because they had bad signs. They know it's a lie because, yeah, I'm impressed with the fire coming out of heaven and all, but what you said is the voice of the dragon. And that's hard. That will get you in trouble. But look how nice they are. Look what they're doing. I know, but that's the voice of the dragon. That's the doctrines of Satan. But can't everybody just get along? I can't. I can't cooperate with that because the voice is the voice of the dragon. They know the truth and are not moved by the supernatural. In other words, they will not be moved by the signs, just like what we said. And they've been told ahead of time what was coming. Because part of this body of truth that they've bought into has told them, this is what's going to happen. And so when it happens, it's like, well, we knew it was going to happen. So they know the truth. They're not going to buy into signs to deceive them and forfeit their truth, and they knew these days were coming. Chapter 13, verse 11. Let's go there real quickly and see if we can shoot through some actual notes here on the text. Thank you for your patience. And let's see what it says. Chapter 13, verse 11. Then I saw another beast. The word another is the word alos. That means another of the same kind. And Kerry, that kind of answers more of your question. Another beast means another of the same kind. If that first beast was a person, then the second beast is a person, another of the same kind, coming out of the earth. This right here, earth, is like, now what does that mean? If one comes out of the sea, I have taught it this way before, the one coming out of the sea comes out of the Gentile nations. He would be the Antichrist or the beast coming out here. Comes from the Gentile nations because the seas are the nations. Okay? Well, then coming out of the earth, that would be the land, or that would be Israel, so he would be Jewish, or the false prophet is Jewish. I personally do believe that. I don't necessarily believe that interpretation, but I do believe the Antichrist is Gentile, and I do believe the false prophet is a Jew, an Israelite, because, for several reasons, but remember we went through the overview, Antiochus Epiphanes, which is a type of the Antichrist, is a Gentile, he's a Greek. But he sold the priesthood to Jason, and then others as they came, to the Jewish, like a guy from the tribe of Benjamin, bought the priesthood so he could serve Antiochus Epiphanes in the temple and help set up the image. It's just a repeat of history. So that's my basis for that. That's not absolute. There's no reason to, get mad and stone me or anything. A lot of people believe the Antichrist is going to be Jewish. We kind of talked about that before, though. But that would, that interpretation, the Antichrist, the beast comes out of the sea, would be the Gentile nation. The false prophet beast comes out of the earth or the land of Israel, so he's Jewish. I do not think that's what is being said here. I've taught that before. It says coming right here. It says right here, coming out of the earth or up from the earth. That's where the abyss is. So possibly you've got nothing more than the same thing happening again. The first beast comes out of the abyss. The second beast comes out of the earth, which is where the abyss is located also. The reason it may say sea and the abyss, I've got that in your notes, like the third or fourth point down there. The ancient myths spoke, I didn't develop this, I just kind of put it in here. The ancient myths spoke of two monsters from the ancient days. Both are mentioned in the scriptures, Leviathan and Behemoth. The Leviathan was the one that came out of the oceans, the abyss or the chaos of the oceans. He arose from there. Behemoth was the one who lived in the wastelands or from the land, and that's where he was conquered and overcame. That may be an indication of where these two beasts are coming from. It may be going way back to imagery from the ancient times, possibly. Basically, I don't know. But you do have one coming out. I think clearly the abyss is mentioned here, the beast coming out here. Where this beast comes from, I don't know. I think it's going to be another demonic possession of this man, apparently. Let's read on. There is a note in Daniel. I got a note there out of Daniel 7:3. Just to point this out again, it says four great beasts, each different from the other, came up out of the sea. And then in chapter 7, verse 17, the same chapter, just 14 verses later, it says the four great beasts are four kings that will arise from the earth. So you see, even in Daniel, you've got them. First, you got them coming out of the sea, and then 14 verses later, they're coming out of the earth. So that would give us latitude that when it says sea and land, put them together. That's one of those things you're just still kind of putting together. Okay, then I saw another beast coming out of the earth. But nonetheless, wherever that is, that's some kind of power. He had two horns like a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. And I think we've mentioned that before already tonight. This is going to be the Christ image. This is going to be the one who is going to fulfill the world's image of Christ. For example, you got a Newsweek will do an article on the Christ, or 60 Minutes will cover the Christ, or whatever. It's the media's image of what the Christ would be like. He would be passionate. He'd be loving. He'd be soft-spoken, whatever. Compared with the Antichrist, who's bent on war and who can make war against him. But you've got to not look at what he looks like or his personality. You've got to listen to his words. Same with anybody. A Bible teacher, a pastor, a preacher, a Christian, someone who's presenting themselves. You can't get sold on the clothes. You can't get sold on the church building. You can't get sold with the pastoral heart. What's your doctrine? What are you teaching? What are you standing for? And most people don't think that way. Most people are moved by something that will appeal to them. And they could care less about the doctrine. They could care less about the absolute truth. And that gets you in a huge trouble. They get you because there's no power there. It's just deception. Yes, ma'am.
I have to ask you, there's two horns like a lamb. You're referring to that now.
Mm-hmm.
In your notes, this refers to the fact that this is the Antichrist. You're meaning false prophet.
Yes.
Okay. Two-thirds of the way down on the paper.
Yep, I see it right there. Two horns like a lamb, which refers to the fact that this is the Antichrist. He even has the animal characteristics of the Christ. Yeah, that must be a typo or something. I don't know what I was meaning. Although I will say this, is this false prophet is, in a sense, that he is the Antichrist image, but it's not the Antichrist. So that might be what I was even saying there, because I did spend some time thinking about that today as I was doing this. Is this really, when you say Antichrist, this is him. But this is like when we talk about the Antichrist coming, this is the world leader, but this is the one who is going to deceive everybody into it. He's the one that's just like Jesus leads us to the Father. He's kind of like a military leader. He's the political leader. And it's like, no one's going to accept him. Yeah, but watch. This guy comes and says, follow him because. And he's going to blaspheme God. He's the one who's going to tell you how bad God is and how evil Christianity is and going to twist all of the truth so that you turn against it. So he's a blasphemer, but he's a deceiver. He's going to soften it and bring you over to the blasphemer.
That's worse.
Exactly, yeah. But you see, they're a combination.
Well, they
well, yeah. In fact, let's read right here. It goes. That's what it says next. Verse 12. He, that's the false prophet, the lamb, exercised all the authority of the first beast on his behalf. What this Antichrist couldn't get the world to do, the false prophet takes that authority. In other words, the false prophet, the Antichrist, remember, received the authority of Satan. Remember, the cosmos system with the crowns were given to him. Well, he's not getting the world to cooperate with him, so he takes that authority, sends it over to the Lamb, who's going to soften it a little bit, who's going to make it more acceptable, and then the false prophet will lead him right back to the Antichrist, and he'll say, I'm God, and they'll say, oh, well, okay, now we understand what you're saying. And made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast. Two ways, as we're going to see as we go through. One, deception. The false prophet is going to make the world worship him by deception. But if that doesn't work, then force is coming. And that's one of the characteristics of false religion or false Christianity. They'll lead you to Christ, but if you won't drink the water, they'll stick your head in it. You know, I mean, they'll lead you to, here it is. I think true Christianity will lead you to Christ and then say, make your choice. It will encourage you. But if a lot of people get, you start seeing them, you get real tense, real mad. It's like, well, they talk about Christ, thinking you're going to buy into it. And when you say, well, no, I don't think I agree with that. Well, then all of a sudden, here comes the onslaught. And it's saying here, he's going to just follow me, just let it go. And then when they think, well, I don't think we don't agree with that. Well, then here's the persecution, and you're either going to die or do it. You don't have a choice any longer. So it's going to appear as a choice, but it really is not. And we got to be careful of that because we have a tendency to do that. I mean, it's human nature. If you don't agree with me, you don't agree with me? Well, then I'll just beat you up until you do. Well, you know the whole saying, you know, like the teacher told the boy to sit down in class, and finally he sat down. He says, okay, I'm sitting down on the outside, but I'm not sitting down on the inside, you know. It made the inhabitants of made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed. And we've got to mention something about that here as we go by at least. Again, some commentators are really bent on this, that this has to be some imitation, some fake, some scheme they've come up with. I personally am still convinced and holding to the fact that this is a real resurrection. This is something that's going to amaze the people. A lot of commentators, was when the speaking of the beast, you know, or the image is going to speak here in the temple, different things. They keep wanting to say it's just an image. It's a trickery. It's some kind of a show. But, you know, I just can't believe that our world today is going to be we see TV. We see image. We're skeptical of everything. And if someone fakes their death, the first thing we're going to think is they fake their death. There's going to have to be something, I believe, very impressive, very miraculous that convinces them. And this death of the first beast, again, the first beast, the Antichrist, is going to receive a fatal wound to its head. The head being the leader of the kingdom. That, again, the head would be the man, Antichrist, who's the head of the kingdom, is going to receive a fatal wound. Right at the midway point, I think. Right at the midway point. Again, I'm giving you my interpretation of this. Again, there may be some, you know, I think he's going to die. I think for his resurrection, the false prophet is going to play into it somehow, but what's going to end up happening is going to be the beast possessing him and the restoration of life. It's going to be an imitation of Christ, Jesus himself, but who else? Even more real to these people, who else is going to be an imitation of? The two prophets, who have just recently themselves been resurrected on national television, or worldwide television. You know what I'm talking about? The false prophets that were killed by the beast? And did I say two false prophets? Yeah, no, I didn't mean the two false prophets. The two witnesses, yeah. Elijah and Moses. Or
think of that.
Right, they've seen something like this occur, and then now they go, well, what just happened? Don't be afraid, watch, over here too. And now he does the same thing, and they're going to be like, wow, and then he sticks around. So I think it's going to be a real resurrection of the dead. He's going to be wounded, maybe a military battle, an assassination. You're going to say the wound to the head. So it appears a wound by the sword. So it's some kind of weapon. It's a wound to the head.
But does Satan have the gift of life?
And that's what commentators will argue with. They say Satan cannot, he can imitate life, but he cannot create life. But again, what we have here is God giving. None of these things, you see, none of these things are they doing. Because of the science, he was given power to do. See, Satan doesn't have power to do anything unless God gives him. Everything is being given to him. So, I mean, don't fall. And again, the commentators always say that's exactly what the commentators say. Satan can do certain things, but he can't create life. Right. And so I don't think, yeah, exactly. So Satan's never had a chance to rule the world before like this. Satan's never had the ability or the freedom to just bring signs and wonders like he's going to deceive the whole world because God's prevented. So God's going to give him this authority. So I have no doubt in my own mind that he, go ahead. God just allow him to be resurrected or whatever. You know, again, I'm trying to put this together, speculating as we're going. But I believe there's a real resurrection. A fatal wound that had been healed. And he performed great and miraculous signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to earth in full view of men. This is one of the most astonishing miracles, meaning what they couldn't do back in 1 Kings in Elijah's day, they are now doing. That is how far things have gone. They've got the freedom to call fire out of heaven whenever they want to. Go ahead. It's your turn. And they are deceiving people. And notice, this is the judgment. The judgment is right here. The judgment is God is letting this happen. He's not protecting the people from deception. Because of the signs he was given power to do on behalf of the first beast, he deceived the inhabitants of the earth. He ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. Now here's the image of the beast, some kind of an image. And again, I don't know if we truly understand what that is. Maybe it's a statue. Maybe it's some kind of a token. We go back historically. Antiochus Epiphanes set a statue of Zeus up with Antiochus' own face on it. So it was, you know, that's what you know, any good king would do. You got the body of a god, but it's got my face on it. You know, that's what Antiochus Epiphanes did. So it may be something like that. But the false prophet is going to set up this image to draw people's worship to this Antichrist. This is mentioned in Daniel of the abomination that causes desolation that's set up in the temple. Jesus mentions this himself. And here it's actually happened. This thing is going to be set up in the temple. It mentions it's going to be set up in a wing of a temple. It also mentions it's going to be set up in the holy place. So however that happens, you know, I'm still kind of trying to feel that out because it says in a wing of the temple. Then it says in the holy place. This image, when Israel then is chased out of the land, they flee into the wilderness, the temple is now taken over by the false prophet who becomes basically the high priest of the temple in Jerusalem. He sets up an image to replace the Ark of the Covenant or whatever, and this Antichrist is worshipped there as God.
Can't there be a lot of images set everywhere?
Yeah, and there could be two. There may be talking about two different things that are happening. Yeah, of course, I would think. Yeah, I'm sure I would think that, yeah, if you're going to have one, you're going to all have one in your house on your car dash and stuff like this, little necklaces, you know. So if you're around for that time, if you're an unbeliever here tonight and you're around during that time, you may want to invest in this right here. You know, I mean, it's your last go around, so go ahead and make the best of it. Or repent right now. Deceive the heavens of the earth, an image. He was given power to give. This is amazing, right? He was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that it could speak and cause all who refuse to worship the image to be killed. The word breath, I've got that written down here. Where is it at? Verse 14. No, yeah, verse 15. Breath is the word pneuma, which we get the word spirit or breath or wind. It is not the word zoe. Or I think the other word is bio. Those are words that are translated life, like the life of God, or bio, which would just be like physical, biological life. Those are the words life. He does not give life to the image. He gives breath or pneuma to the image, which is a little different. In other words, he's not giving life, but the thing comes alive, gives the image of being life. Some Bibles translate pneuma as life, but it's really in NIV, which I do not think is the best translation by any means, but NIV does translate it breath right here. So this false prophet, the beast that comes out of the earth, which I believe is, you know, out of the pit of hell somehow, is going to give some kind of supernatural ability to this image, which is an inanimate object, is going to come to life. Now let me just interject right here, just because of where we're at in time, and not tonight's time, but history. because tonight's time doesn't bother me at all. I'll be respectful. This image, I just kick around the idea. I wanted to say this quickly so we don't spend too much time on it. Is this cloning playing into this at all? Is genetics and cloning playing into this? I don't know. I mean, these are one of the things you talk about, and in a few years you listen to the CD sound really stupid, you know. But cloning, giving breath to it, everybody's amazed by it, as if man now has now got control of life. They've proven, once again, where life comes from. And then this whole thing, this is going to then branch off, become the number of the beast or the number of his name. And is this going to be some kind of genetic code that now you receive this mark? Remember, once you receive this mark, you're done. You're basically, you're as good as dead. Meaning, once you die, you can't repent, contrary to some doctrines around the world. Once you die, you can't repent. Once you receive this mark, you can't repent. Which gives me the impression, again, I'm speculating, that once we see that mark, something happens. You change. You have died in a sense and have entered into another dimension. You've become a different person. You've become another creature, another species. I might be way off base here. But you've got this image. What is this image? We think statue. Again, I've got to say this. Commentators sometimes say, well, it could be a robot, you know, with some kind of speaking. It's going to be able to speak. But you realize that humanists say, to be a human, you have to be able to do two things. You have to be able to speak and function in society. If you can't speak and form thoughts, and you can't function in society, you really aren't human. You're not part of the human race, and it's okay then, of course, to get rid of them because you're just like an animal. This image is going to speak, which indicates in their mind it's a soul. It's alive, which, you know, speaking is a huge deal. And it's going to give orders that if you do not worship this image, if you do not accept this image, you're to be killed. In other words, it's a purification of the planet. It's taking everybody into the same, maybe they're just everybody in the same religion, the worship, beast worship, because we've got to unite the religion. Maybe that's all it is the unification of religion so we can hold our country together, our world together. Maybe the purification of the race so that we can overcome all the problems we've had over the last 3.5-4 years, which would be genetic, maybe it's a whole development of cloning. You've got demonic activity. You've got, you know, supposedly space visitors coming, as I talked about that last week. See, we're all over the board right here. But nonetheless, let's read on and stay in the text. Come back from Galen's imaginary world. He was given power to give breath to the image. I will say this. I started saying this a minute ago. It is not a robot. This is not a robot with a tape recorder hid behind it. Come on, folks. I mean, I don't care. You know, in 1950, if you know Walt Disney did down there at Disneyland or something like that, it'd be, oh wow, look, the little rabbit's talking. How's that happening? It's a tape recorder. It's a, you know, a mechanical bunny rabbit. It's like it ain't gonna work in the temple here with you know all. I know the technology's gonna fall off the cliff, but I don't think men are gonna forget about the fact of you know tape recorders and robots. How's that doing that? You know, this is something that is beyond science understanding, I think. This is beyond science right here, I think.
Well, back when demons would infiltrate people, yep. I mean, Jesus mm-hmm. spoke with demons who were coming mm-hmm. out of people. So can't, if demonic...
It's the ventriloquist demon. They didn't do this in temples in the ancient days. They'd have the statue, the image. They did this. They'd have the image standing there, and then the image would talk. But then it's got the priest over there throwing his voice to the image with ventriloquism. They did that, I don't say all the time, but it was something they did.
Now that verse 15 says he was granted power to do these things. So he, the false prophet, was actually given the power or empowered by God.
I think, yeah, someone's given him the power, and I think God is pulling
the
back the...
Our God doing what is before this time not been seen.
Right.
In this way at all, was it? I mean,
right.
Your point that it isn't Satan granting this power.
Right.
Life.
Exactly. God, the reason they haven't done many of these things is God has not allowed them to.
Yeah.
I mean, the demons have never been allowed to just come out of the abyss. They're out. He's given power to do this. He's given power to this. And now it's like, go ahead. Bring something to life. You know, people will not be able to explain this. And that's what I'm saying. This is an amazing moment. And if you do not, I'll say this again. We start off, and this is a good time to point it out. If you do not have faith, I mean, not that, you know, I think I believe. If you do not know Bible doctrine, if you don't know God is the Creator, that Jesus Christ is coming soon, that there's the Antichrist that's been prophesied since the days of Daniel, is coming here on the earth, and you don't have that, you're going to leave this go, I mean, you're not going to write an article for the Des Moines Register and explain this with your theology. You have nothing to say. I would have nothing except I know what the Word of God has said. I know the truth. And I'm going to hold to the truth. And it's not going to be like you're not going to be rewarded for holding to the truth. You're going to be persecuted. It's just a matter of like you're looking at the dark side, which looks real good right now and makes a whole lot of sense. But you know it's the voice of the dragon. It looks like I know that's the voice of the dragon. And so again today, I don't mind, and again, I know you don't either, but I don't mind being bold in the sense of, no, that's not the truth. I'm not here for Christian unity. You see, but at the same time, we want to get along with believers. We want to cooperate, but we don't want Christian unity at the expense of letting the dragon speak into our midst. And at times I might be the voice of the dragon speaking, you know what I'm saying? I might be bringing about bad teaching or something. But we've got to hold the truth, because if there's coming a time, at least in history, where the only thing you're going to have is your knowledge of the truth. And if you don't understand it, it's not like you're going to be able to prove it. You're not going to be able to argue it. This is too impressive. This is amazing.
But God would have prepared them with teachers and... I mean,
right.
And they would have had the whole thing opened up to them at that time.
And that's where we're headed right here. You're right. Now, they have had 3.5 years. You had the witnesses. You've got the two prophets, the 144,000, the two witnesses. You've got, 6,000 years of time. God has been pouring His Word in. And this is actually the time of allowing people to be deceived that have not loved. Those that have not loved the truth are going to buy in the darkness.
Now, God is just. Therefore, He has to allow this to. He has to give permission to Satan, or Satan would have an excuse or something.
Right, yep.
I may sound weird, but...
Yeah, I know, yeah, exactly.
He has to say, okay, Satan, you can play your whole hand.
Exactly.
Right?
Try, yeah. Yep.
God and Satan in poker. Ooh. Yeah.
Verse 16. It says, He also forced everyone, small and great, rich and poor, and free and slave, to receive a mark on his right hand or on his forehead. And I've got that word marked down right there. The word mark is the word kerasso, which means, comes from the verb that means I engrave. And it was used to refer to putting images and names of emperors on coins. This word was used of slaves, soldiers, and worshipers receiving tattoos. That, I mean, the word in the context means tattoo. It means some kind of a mark so that when you pass by, they can see it. I mean, I want to get into. I want to talk about the microchip. I want to talk about the barcode. That all may be part of it. But right here in the text, it means a tattoo. So that when they come by and you're trying to buy groceries, hey, I'm in the gang. I've got my tattoo. That is what the word is. That is not a strange word. It was used of soldiers. The Roman soldiers, SPQR, would be engraved on them. You're a member of the military, and that you're here. Gave you rights, gave you protection, gave you responsibility. They knew where you belonged. It identified you. Slaves would have a tattoo on them so they could not just run away. Hey, I'm just mixing in the crowd. You can't mix in the crowd. You got a tattoo on you. Worshippers who wanted to be identified with their God, like we'd wear a cross or something, they'd want to put a tattoo. I'm a priest of this God. He's on my body. That is what it means. And so the false prophet, to help identify, he's trying to lead everybody here. And some people will follow. Man, they're all over this. But some are going, I don't know. So we still got some resistors here that we haven't been able to deceive. All right. Then those that have joined us freely, you get a free tattoo. And everybody will see now. And now, if they do not have a free tattoo, we kill them because they have not joined in and it could be that simple. And no one's allowed to buy or sell anything at the grocery store, buy a house, can't buy medication, can't buy anything. Because if they find you selling to someone that's not part of the group, you'll get killed. So it could be that simple. Now we get into, could it be the microchip? Could it be the barcode? All that's possible. And now we begin to speculate. And of course, I've been speculating all night. But right here, it's clear in the Bible what it's saying. It's a tattoo. That does not mean it cannot be a tattooed barcode. That does not mean it can't be a tattoo in the form of a microchip that's got all of your credit information. That doesn't mean it can't be that. I'm just telling you what it means right there. so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now, kind of like what June was saying, I'm just where we want to go with. This, well, I've got the, on the very last page right here. You know, we talked about Darby, John Nelson Darby from the 1800s, the Plymouth Brethren. He's the one that came up with the rapture idea, great, and you know, one of the foundational teachers of eschatology. I respect him highly. He's from England. This is what he writes about this verse. I don't know, last thing on the last page there. He says, I confess my ignorance as to the number 666. I cannot present you with anything satisfactory to myself. We find answering to the number 666 the words apostasy and tradition, but I cannot say anything positive on that point. In other words, he comes this right here and he says, I don't know. And I tried to do something on the internet tonight before I came down here and trying to find some list somewhere of all the different people Henry Kissinger works. Nero works. That's the most popular one. Nero fits this number. They add the numbers of their name, you know, like the letter A would be a 1 and the B would be a 2, but it'd be in Greek. But it could be in Latin. It could be in Hebrew. Howard Reagan, I think it works. What's that? Ronald Wilson Reagan works. Hitler. Yeah, I mean, just there's all kinds. I did it one time for the church when I was down at the Brethren Church. I did it with my own name, and several of them appreciated that. Yeah, oh yeah, I can get 666 out of it. Just here, I got to say right here, the second paragraph on the bottom of page 3. Yeah, there's just it goes on and on, and then it can become Bill Gates. Bill Gates fits his original name. Yeah, because he's the most powerful man in the world. But anyway, calculating the number is unending as people mix together a variety of first, middle, last names, along with titles, nicknames, and character traits. You understand what I'm saying? You can get anybody's name to work, 666. Because what do you mean? First and last name, just the initials, put their nickname in it. What's one of their major character traits? And then they've got a title. They're, you know, the boss. They're the president. They're the whatever. Yeah, whatever fits in there. The character traits in a variety of languages. You don't have to stick with English. You can use Greek. Hebrew is really powerful because that's really spooky. Aramaic, Latin, English. I mean, you take a variety of names, put them in a variety of languages, all written and spelled differently over a period of 2,000 years. Have you got too many letters? Just look for 2,000 years where they spelled it a little bit different and use that spelling. So, I mean, it's unending. I mean, this thing is wide open. And so I got to agree with Darby. We can talk about it, but it's not for us because of this right here. This calls for wisdom, which comes from God. If anyone has insight, that means you're standing there looking at it. Let him calculate the number. This verse is kind of exciting because this is one of those verses where it's not for you. This lets you know time is going on. This, you can figure it out in just the very fact that you can look on the internet for hours and get hundreds and hundreds of different options, that there's no consensus on this. Some that are more spooky than others, but there's no one's got the market on this. And about the time they get somebody, he dies. Or Ronald Reagan, it's like, well, so much for that one. Oh, wait, he could come back to life. It says, the wisdom is when the Spirit of God will reveal it. If anyone has insight, that means you're standing there looking at it. So the people that are living at this time, one of the things that they've got, how do they know not to follow the signs? If they've got this right here, it says, if you've got wisdom, God is going to reveal it to you, and you're standing there looking at it, and you're searching for this truth, you've got this information, it will be clear. It will be as clear as some of the simple doctrines we have today. People stumbled. Remember how they stumbled on the cross? It's like, we look at it. Jesus says, I'm going to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to be handed over to the Gentiles. They're going to mock me, spit on me. They'll crucify me, nail me on a cross. And after 3 days, I'll come back to life. Hey, what does he mean? It says, the disciples talked amongst themselves, trying to figure out what he meant. And then, like a few days later, it happens. They watch it happen. And then they all go run and hide. And then 3 days later, they come and say, he's not in the grave. Oh, no, they've taken his body. No, he's alive, just as he said. Oh, I get it. And then all of a sudden, it made sense to them. But you see, it's so easy for us to laugh at them. Because it's, if I was there, I would have said, guys, come on, he's going to go to the crucifixion. You know, it's in Isaiah. We know about this. 3 days. But I wouldn't have. I'd been hiding with them.
Yeah.
If that. I probably would have abandoned the group a long time ago. But the people this time, I believe, let him calculate the number.